Welcome to UBS On Air, and thank you for joining us. I'm James Jack, the head of UBS Wealth Management USA's Business Owner Client segment. In this second part of our two-part roundtable on the state of the middle market M&A environment post-COVID-19, we'll continue our discussion with our panel of experts from across the M&A industry. In part one, we focused on the current environment, and now we'll begin to look ahead on where things may be going and how business owners can begin to prepare now. Once again, joining me today is Oliver Henderson, Managing Director and Head of UBS Business Development Group, Stephen Pidgeon, the Co-Managing Partner of the Phoenix Office for DLA Piper, and David Sterling, the National Leader of the M&A Tax Practice for RSM US. Gentlemen, once again, thank you and welcome to UBS On Air. In part one, we talked a bit about what was going on in the M&A space, mostly that things, you know, not surprisingly, have slowed down a bit. There were, in fact, some deals still happening. There were some surprises that impacted both, you know, all of you guys. We also talked a little bit about the CARES Act and some of the industries that have been both positively and negatively impacted by all of this, because, you know, there are both sides of it. So if you haven't already, I invite our listeners to check out part one, and let's continue the conversation now. So, Ollie, I'll start with you. As we begin to think about the future for business owners, perhaps we can start with what's happening in the world of potential buyers. How have they been reacting to all of this?
Oh, thank you, James. Yes. Yeah, so look, potential buyers have really been, I think it's been two variants. There are a number of potential buyers, especially private equity and family offices. They are still flush with capital. They are still very actively seeking new investments and trying to find attractive companies for potential longer-term investment opportunities. So, you know, those are two groups that have been very active and very aggressive. We've had a number of inquiries direct from private equity and family offices saying even during the downturn, irrespective of how COVID-19 plays out, that they want to see new companies and new opportunities and have the capital to move quickly to help those companies. From a strategic buyer base, I think there's still interest, but that base is being a bit more cautious. And quite often, it's really they also need to make sure that their own existing business is able to deal with COVID-19. And in addition to their business, the health of their employees and their community is intact. So I think strategic buyers have pulled back a little bit, but it's more having to deal with their own business in addition to going out and finding acquisition opportunities. That being said, you know, I think throughout these processes, even with the significant interest of private equity and family offices, during the process, they are taking a much more pragmatic approach at diligence. They're taking a deeper dive. They're really looking at all the different sensitivity analysis that should be done on how the business will perform with this type of event or any other potential black swan type events. So you're really seeing people dig in deeper and have a much more significant view on the diligence process.
That's a good segue. The due diligence process has always been something that can be a bit intense. How do we all here think that the process may evolve as a result of all of this, and what might be some things business owners should be doing now to prepare for that? David, perhaps we can start on the financial side of things.
Yeah, I think owners should be thinking about quality of earnings adjustments, both positive and negative. Obviously, if your company is going through a period of slow sales, you'll want to be able to show in a adjusted EBITDA presentation, how much effect that had on your EBITDA and how that should be adjusted to figure out what your adjusted EBITDA is going forward. And you should also be looking for, you know, positive types of things. Some companies have been affected positively by the pandemic, and you have to look at what kind of negative type of adjustments you would make to EBITDA going forward. You, as a seller, you may not necessarily want to make those adjustments, but you need to be prepared to minimize those type of adjustments, because that's what the buyer's going to be looking at, is trying to figure out what the adjusted EBITDA of the company should be, to try to forecast what the adjusted EBITDA is going to be going forward after the pandemic, which will be probably the holding period.
Yeah, so look, I think something that we're telling people is, you know, while usually you would recommend a month or two to get prepared to start a process, you're probably going to need to lengthen out that preparation period, because the amount of information and the due diligence that would be involved, you really want to spend more time instead of less time up front. We're also talking to a lot of people that are considering a process where they may or may not have engaged and gotten a quality of earnings during their process. We recommend even more so that you would want to consider that as part of your process, because the more work that you can do up front to make sure that your financials, your business is ironclad, especially given the significantly more diligence that buyers are going to do, you want to do that work up front in this environment, because where before you may have had buyers that would have skirted over some of the diligence just to move forward and consummate a transaction, that's unlikely in this environment. People, just about every serious buyer will do a significant amount of due diligence. And with that, the owners, really, you know, the sellers really need to do their work up front and make sure that they've looked at every single angle that people made diligence and make sure it's as pristine as possible for a sale process.
Ali, I'll stick with you. What about employee stock ownership plans or ESOPs as an alternative to this process or third-party sales? Are they still a viable alternative in this environment for business owners who might be seeking liquidity and may have been kind of frozen out given all of this?
Sure. So, look, regarding employee stock ownership plans and sales to an ESOP, they're viable options. The risk is on an ESOP. Those companies that are good candidates for an ESOP need to be stable businesses. So they need to have stable financials, especially in this type of environment where they can continue to perform and continue to fund the loan that's been made to the ESOP trust. So it's still a viable option. I would assume that some companies that may have considered an ESOP prior to COVID-19 may not be able to do that, because if their company is really being impacted and the earnings or EBITDA have been impacted, they're unlikely to be good candidates for an ESOP, given that stability and that need to continue to pay off the debt that allows an ESOP transaction. That being said, an ESOP's always an interesting option for a sale process, because it does allow you a secondary purchaser outside of potentially selling to a strategic or a private equity firm.
So, Ali, I think what I'm hearing is that many of the same rules of the road for ESOPs still very much apply: having stability, strong management, strong earnings, a low debt load. But the pressure given this environment certainly has upped itself. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yeah. Okay. I think it's spot on, James.
Steve, you mentioned earlier the closing process. How are you seeing things or thinking that things may evolve there?
Sure. Thank you. That's also a great question. I'm sure most of the listeners know that a lot of transactions are done where there is you actually sign the agreement to sell, and then there is a period of time during which various things occur prior to closing. So you might go out and get consents of key customers, landlords, lenders. If the deal is large enough, it may require antitrust approvals or overseas competition approvals. So there's that interim period between signing and closing, and there's always a set of interim covenants that says you'll operate in the ordinary course of business and you won't do the following thing. I think people are taking a harder look at that, because operating course of business over the last 2 months has varied quite a bit. And so I think there's just a lot more focus on what used to be fairly perfunctory interim covenants. Same thing is true of the conditions to closing. So the things that I mentioned, to get to closing, you have to go out and get various consents and the like. And what, you know, what we're finding is that the third parties that need to render those consents are taking a harder look. They want to make sure that whoever is supplanting the seller on leases or debt or the like is going to be, after the deal is done, particularly if it's going to include leverage, going to be in a position to continue to service the debt or the leases or the like. So on that side, there's a little bit more that's being done. And then on the customer side as well, as I said before, people are much more focused on making sure customers are locked in at the closing. And I think the last thing that we see is that, you know, post-closing adjustments are getting tighter. So a lot of times a price will be X plus or minus the seller delivering a certain level, say, of working capital. And people are a lot more nervous about AR that's been generated in the last 2, 3, 4 months being collected. And so we see a lot more around the post-closing adjustment provisions in terms of the working capital provision.
David, we've gone through the process now in terms of both due diligence as well as actually closing the deal. What should business owners be thinking about on the tax planning side? Is it any different versus what you may have been advising business owners just a few months ago?
No, other than with respect to what you can get through net operating loss carrybacks, this planning is still the same. What's the after-tax proceeds from a transaction? How much of the gain is going to be a capital gain that's going to be taxed at 20 or 23.8% for federal tax purposes as opposed to ordinary income taxed at 29.6 to 37% or higher? Those are still the things that we're looking at. And with regard to ESOPs, if you're considering an ESOP transaction, if you're selling 30% or more of your shares to the ESOP, there's an opportunity to take your proceeds and reinvest it in equity and debt securities of domestic corporations and defer the gain until you sell those securities. So we're still looking at the same types of things that that we looked at before, minimizing taxes and deferring taxes.
And Ali, to wrap us up, how would you bring all of these things together in terms of what a business owner and their financial advisor should be considering and working on now as they think about, you know, potentially getting into an M&A process?
Yeah, look, I mean, one thing that we've advised business owners over the past couple weeks, we've had a number of people say, oh, well, no, now is not the time to discuss it. Now, it would be better just to wait until the markets are high-flying, and then we'll start looking at a potential sale process. And we told people, look, as long as your business and your employees are safe and well-functioning, this is actually a great time to take a look, to have a conversation, because you really want to put the planning up front. On the individual side with your financial advisor, you really want to start figuring out when is the best time, when is the opportune time to transfer the business. Are there any individuals within the family that would make sense, or is it going to be going out to outside investors? With that planning process, that quite often gives the business owner the best idea of when they would want to sell their business. Why? Because through proper planning, you can determine how much money do you need to continue on with your livelihood, your legacy, whatever, you know, endeavors you want on the financial side. And that gives you, okay, here's an approximate amount of money that I would need to make a sale of my business and continue to live the life that I would like to live. That gives people certainty going into a process. So when they do go through a process, especially in this environment, if they're expecting a $50 million sale price, maybe COVID hits, then you end up getting your purchase price or sale price adjusted down to $40 million, that can still be very okay from a seller's perspective. and help them go forward and consummate a transaction. Also importantly, those decisions on the individual side with their financial advisor quite often impacts the decisions that they're going to make on the timing of the sale process and also who they may end up selling to at the end of the day. We had already discussed about ESOPs. Some people find that more attractive, and they may determine that they live in a very high tax environment within a state that has high state taxes, and an ESOP transaction may be most advantageous to them over a regular way sale process. So quite often that planning with their financial advisor creates a bedrock of that, and we're telling people to talk with, whether it's, you know, legal experts, CPA experts, or investment banking experts, now's the time to get that information, because then you can start making decisions today that will impact any potential future monetization of your business, where all the more so, as it's been mentioned on this podcast, you really need to make sure that you've taken every step to prepare the business as full as possible for a potential sale.
I couldn't agree more. I think the takeaway here is, even if you're 6, 12 months or even more away from starting a process, it's really important to use this time to talk to your financial advisor, your tax and legal advisors, and really come up with a strategy and do some planning, particularly if you've gotten past some of the initial impacts of COVID-19 and you know, are thinking about the future. But with that, gentlemen, again, thank you so much for a really great discussion. It was a pleasure and an honor having you, and we very much appreciate your insights. For our listeners, as always, speak to your UBS financial advisor for more information before, during, and after the sale of a business, as well as checking out the resources from DLA Piper and RSM. Here at UBS, we've established a great website with our key COVID-19 related resources for business owners at ubs.com/business-resilience. More can be found on exit planning at ubs.com/exit planning. Thank you so much as always, and have a great day. Be well. The information contained in this podcast is not a solicitation to purchase or sell investments. Any information presented is general in nature and not intended to provide individually tailored investment advice. The strategies and/or investments referenced may not be suitable for all investors, as the appropriateness of a particular investment or strategy will depend on an investor's individual circumstances and objectives. UBS Financial Services does not provide tax or legal advice. UBS Financial Services, Inc., DLA Piper, LLP, and RSM US, LLP are not affiliated. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA SIPC.